Welcome to another episode of Sisters in Conversation. I'm your host, Debello Motswane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of a platform called Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On today's episode, I'm joined by Laurentia Jacobs, who is an associate at Mashitisho Attorneys. She's also a speaker at the Sister in Law workshop. Ooh. And specializes in criminal law and labor law and child maintenance. Welcome to the show, Laurentia.
Good morning, Tabello, and good morning, everyone, for that tuned in. Thank you so much for having me. You know, I know that Sister in Law is your baby, so thank you for trusting me to cater to your baby.
It's not the first time that you've contributed to this platform, so thank you for always saying yes. You know, I would have been surprised if you said no.
No, I mean, finding attorneys that don't talk about themselves.
Oh, is that why no one ever says no? Everyone I've invited is always more than happy to come onto the show and to share a little bit about themselves and their journey, obviously with the hopes of just empowering the next generation of Black female practitioners, you know. Yeah. So let's start from the very beginning. Who's Laurentia? Where did you grow up? Okay. How many siblings do you have? Do you love them?
Okay. So I am the eldest of three daughters.
Okay.
I grew up in the south of Johannesburg, better known as El Dorado Park. Mm-hmm. It's an area known for social and economical struggles. Mm. If you could think why I practice criminal law, it's because I think I was exposed to a lot of criminal elements growing up. I'm not going to say that I grew up in the bad part of Eldos. That would be a lie. Mm. I grew up in the good side of it. Obviously, I always knew that I was destined for something bigger than my community, bigger than, you know, the expectation for a colored woman. And I also need to give back to people that invested in my life. And I think that is so important as to why we, where we are now, we need to give back to the community. We need to give back to women in law, students, and all of that. Because I had teachers that invested in me. Maybe my life was set out long before I knew it, but I was always class monitor. I was always RCL. In matric, I was the president of the RCLs. So I think my life was always directed in a way where I had to speak up for others. A few months ago, we actually had something at the office. And, you know, we just decided to open the year in prayer. And someone said something along the lines of, it's not easy doing what we do. He sees it as a ministry. And I never thought of it in that way. You know, as doctors save lives, we also save lives. We meet people at number 99.99, and we need to fix problems. And I think it also comes back to, you know, my personality. You know, I'm also a very strong person. And in this field, especially as a woman, you consistently have to be strong. It's not something, you know, there's always podcasts and reels going around talking about, you know, women don't always have to be strong. But I think as South African women, we kind of, we grow up inherently having that ability to just be strong. I'm gonna let you guys in on something that happened in like December. You know, I wasn't in a good space and whatever. And I had a client that needed a requisition. For those that don't know, a requisition is when someone is in custody and you need to call the matter earlier to court to either have them released or to attempt a bail application or for whatever reason you're doing your requisition. And I got the call and I wanted to be like, you know, I'm not in a good space. Yeah, you know, I'm going through a lot.
Yeah.
But I had to pick myself up. I had to go to court. I had to start the kicking requisition and process. And thank goodness nobody gave me attitude because I was not the one.
Look, so, you're not the one every day, but that particular day.
I went to court. Everyone assisted me like brilliantly. We ended up going to court the Monday and my client was released. He's been in custody over the whole December period. He couldn't see. So what we were trying to prohibit was him not being present for his child's first day of school. So, you know, as much as, you know, we don't always have a good day, it's built bigger in than as, you. It's bigger than yes, you, this profession. Yes. You know, you have someone's life in your hands, yeah, ultimately.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you for that. Let's take it back a little bit to, I mean, you did mention that part of the reason why you studied law was because you were exposed to, you know, the dangerous or rather the struggle side of, you know, growing up in El Dorado Park. But can you tell us a little bit about your campus experience and how did you know that you'd definitely branch into something like criminal law?
Surprisingly, I actually shared the story with my colleague the other day. I think I was in third year and my pastor introduced me to an admitted attorney that was working at Legal Aid South Africa. Mm. She was based in Pretoria branch. And she took me into her home for an entire week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while we were busy cooking and doing what ladies do, she asked me, in what field of law do you want to practice? And I said, I want to be a corporate attorney. Mm-hmm. I just want to vet contracts. I just want to sit in the office. I don't want to litigate. I don't want to do all of that.
With your big personality.
And then went to Legal Aid South Africa. I was based in the Pretoria branch for a week. My first day in court, I came back and I knew that was for me. I mean,
What happened that day?
I just loved the environment. I saw the prosecutor, I saw the defense attorneys, and I was like, but I know these things. Like, I can do this.
Mm.
This is so much fun. And then a couple of days I spent in the civil office. I spent a couple of days in the property law office. And I was, like, bored out of my mind.
Yeah.
All I was thinking about was, you know, going back to court. Mm. And, you know, I think around that time it was also the Oscar Pretorius matter. You know, all of that was, like, in my head. And I think I just gravitated towards criminal law.
Mm.
But I also think it's important for, you know, students watching this to know that the firm where you serve your articles shapes the attorney you will be.
Yeah.
Because if you want to practice criminal law and you find yourself in an RAF firm, you're going to hate articles.
Yeah.
You're going to be forced to specialize in something you don't want to practice in. You're going to hate the profession. There are a handful of attorneys who actually turn around after admission and go after, you know, the field of law they want to go in. But, I mean, it's comfortable.
Yeah.
If all I know is RAF, I'm going to do RAF.
Because it's comfortable.
It's comfortable. Yeah. So you really need to be intentional and,
and
do your research on the firm. Don't just, I know it's difficult to secure articles, but do some research. Understand what type of attorney you want to be.
Yeah.
If I had been in a conveyancing firm, I would have hated articles.
Absolutely.
Because I'm a litigator.
I've never looked at it that way, that sometimes you hate the experience because of the type of work or, you know, the area of practice that you find yourself in. So thank you for bringing that up. That is actually something very crucial to consider if you're finding yourself in a space that you're calling toxic. Maybe it's not necessarily the people. It's just the type of work. That sounds awful.
I mean, imagine you having to go to criminal court every day.
So let's not imagine. But tell me about this, the other things you were doing while you were in varsity, almost manifesting towards, you know, that criminal law practice, or rather even during your articles. What kind of things were you doing on a day-to-day basis?
No, I'll be honest with you. I was not these new school students that are, you know, doing stuff on the side. I mean, I'm not going to lie and say, you know, I worked hard to get where I am, yes. But I think that life happens. I think that God knew where he needed to place me, and I ended up being where I needed to be. I don't think, you know, had I done VAC work at Legal Aid, VAC work somewhere else, I would have been where I am today. Because if I even look at the two firms I was at prior to the firm where I'm currently working at, I've always had a different role at the firm
to what they offer.
Exactly. So I think it's what's meant for you is meant for you. I'm a firm believer in that. It's important to have determination to make the necessary sacrifices.
Absolutely.
But if that door's not for you, you can beat on it. You can try and push it down. It's not your door.
Sure. I love that, because a lot of the time we really just spend, you know, so much time being anxious about not finding a particular, you know, course or not finding a particular area of practice. But sometimes if you just sit in the silence for a bit or sit in the period of waiting, you know, while you're obviously being intentional, doing your research and wada-wada, you'll very well land up where you need to be. I like that.
And I also think you only know what type of practitioner you're going to be once you're in the field.
Mm.
Because I look at our candidate attorney. You also said, you know, he wants to be a criminal attorney.
Mm.
You know, that's all he wants to do. That's all he wants to do. But then I look at him doing labor work.
Mm. And he's so great at it.
Yeah. And I'm like, but, you know, sometimes what we think varsity taught us, it's completely different to practice.
Yeah.
A lot of you watching this don't know what a return of service is. I never knew what one was back in varsity.
So
but when
true.
You start practicing, you understand how important that piece of paper is.
Sure.
So that is what your life as a student is. You have this idea of what type of attorney you're going to be.
But you don't actually know the nitty-gritty.
You also don't know yourself. I think, can we dive into a little bit of marriage?
Yes. We can dive into anything.
I also think that if I look at my divorces, people don't know who they are.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you get married at 24, at 21. You don't know who you are.
Mm.
So I see that as the professional as well. At 21, I thought I'd be a different type of attorney.
Yeah.
At 24, I was a different type of attorney.
Absolutely.
I'm almost 30. I'm a different attorney.
I see it.
So it's not so much that, you know, there are more and more divorces or people are getting married to the wrong person. It's just people don't know that you are going to change and you are allowed to change.
Mm.
I think it's important also finding someone that aligns with every version of you. Because, I mean, me at 21 is not me at 29.
Don't even get me started. So, just thinking about it.
So, and I think that I've sat through consults where clients will always say to me, Lorentia, you know, the person that I'm divorcing is not the person I married. And that is evident that we grow as people. So, yeah, guys, also remember to sign your internuptial contracts. Because if you change, the person you are at 21 is not the person you are at 35.
Yo, I love that. There was something now I wanted to ask you. I forgot. We were talking about just before marriage with Juma, that you're a different person at 21, different attorney. Oh, then I wanted to say that there's also like more and more people who are studying straight after their LLB. So they're going to their master's, right?
Yeah.
And that's because they are not able to secure articles, but also it's because they were almost one directional about the kind of, they want to secure articles. They don't necessarily want to go into graduate recruitment programs or try to, you know, do in-house work or whatever. But you find that somebody will then do a master's in environmental law, get articles, and never look at that environmental law qualification ever again.
I mean, I don't have a master's in environmental law, but I took it as an elective. I'm so far from why I took it, I don't know.
You see, and actually, I did a lot of my articles in intellectual property.
Okay.
A lot of the time I spent there. I do still love intellectual property law.
Okay.
But it's not my area of practice.
Yeah. It's not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's why I'll go back and say, you know, what's meant for you is meant for you.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, you've got, you practice in deceased estate and somewhere along the line you find that, you know, you're supposed to be a conveyancer.
Mm.
That's where you'll end up. I think we need to also grow through our struggles. I don't think that I would be as great of an attorney as I am had I not struggled. Articles was not easy. And I'm glad that it wasn't easy. I think that it gave me like so, it shaped me. It gave me like tough skin. Like no one can break me. I can go to court knowing that my opponent is 10 years post me or is an advocate.
But you're confident.
I'm confident.
Yeah.
I know my file. I know my matter, start to finish. I drafted those papers and they know in the office.
And I think that's important.
I don't like arguing other people's papers.
Yeah.
So that is, you know, I'm intentional. Mm. You need to know who you are.
Mm. Mm.
That's the crux of it.
Mm.
So struggles shape you.
Yeah.
I don't think we should.
Yeah. We shouldn't always glamorize it being easy. And I know a lot of the time we tend to use the word toxic environment so loosely. But sometimes we must be able to, you know, differentiate between toxic and if something is just, you know, part and parcel of the process of growing. Because it is painful growing. It is. That's why it's called growing pains. And sometimes it's just discomfort at the growth that's expected of you in that environment. It's not necessarily toxic. So we must also just have a little bit of wisdom to differentiate between the two experiences.
I mean, also thinking back to when we served articles, it was a lot tougher, I would say.
You've just made me feel older with that statement. Thinking back to, like, I'm like, yo. Okay, it was a long time ago.
No, because, I mean, I had a situation recently, you know, where I was talking to a candidate attorney because I had a matter on Monday and I was double booked. And I spoke to her and I said, you know, I haven't heard anything from your office. What's happening on Monday? Are we proceeding? What's happening? Do I need to send my candidate attorney? Is it a postponement? What's happening? And the way in which she spoke to me, I was taken aback. I was like, when I was a candidate attorney, I never spoke to an admitted attorney that way.
Mm.
You know, I'm not saying that this new generation is softer or, you know, they're more entitled or whatever. But
you're thinking it.
I'm thinking it. I'm thinking it. I think, and also because they are trained by millennial attorneys, we don't want them facing what we face. So we shield them a lot.
Mm.
So we protect them, you know, we'll rather do the difficult matter and not let them figure it out because no one helped us. You know, we had to figure it out by ourselves, but forgetting that those lessons being sent to court with a file and you're only ready this morning and you're blank. it teaches you that skills, you know, where you can go to court,
work
you
under
figure
pressure.
It out, you can work under pressure. Now we shield them a lot. So I don't know, is it their problem? Are we the problem? But I mean, we're also trying to eradicate the toxic work environment.
That's so true.
But
we mustn't do it too much that now it's just us doing all of the work and there's no point in us hiring other people, because at the end of the day, we are still trying to keep the dignity of the profession.
Exactly.
You get it? And it's hard work here. It is hard work. I think I also wanted to add on to that it's very important for younger professionals to also understand that more than anything in the profession, you are colleagues. I even want to say your friends. Even if your clients are the ones who are fighting and at each other's necks, you cannot walk into court and not greet me. You cannot walk into our mediation or any meeting that we have with our clients and not greet me because you're trying to impress your client. Yes, they are the one that's paying you today.
Yeah.
But best believe you're the one that's going to need a favor from me tomorrow. And I'm going to remember that you walked into a room and didn't even acknowledge my existence. We are colleagues. We are not fighting. It's our clients who are fighting.
I can attest to that. I mean, if you are young in the profession, you just started your articles, learn to make friends with your opponent.
Sure.
I still speak to a lot of my opponents. A lot of my opponents are my correspondent attorneys in other matters. I have opponents who tell me, oh yeah, I've got this new client. I don't do labor. Can you take this client?
Sure.
You know, that's a relationship I have with my opponents. And had I been aggressive or, you know, like you said, I didn't greet you at court, I wouldn't have that relationship. Mm. And I think that it's so important that we have this culture, you know, where I think you have that culture. I've got that culture.
Mm.
And we have a sisterhood.
Yeah.
So I have a WhatsApp group chat with people I used to work with. We're all still friends. Have an issue, we pop it in the WhatsApp group. Guys, has anyone done this type of
matter? And the ideas that stem from that, it's creativity on another level. Yeah. Because sometimes you might be battling with one thing and you put it in a group chat and whoever has either done it or is seeing it from a different perspective, which you had no, you know, view of.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it's so important. I mean, I literally, before I came in, I was on the phone with someone I litigated against back when I served articles. And we were just, you know, having a legal conversation, a legal debate on this matter that he's doing. And he said to me, like, you know, I love this where, you know, we can just talk and open ourselves up and, you know, have this legal discussion.
Respect each other.
Respect each other. And knowing that even when I have an issue, he's a brilliant criminal advocate. So when I call him, that's when I really don't know.
Yeah.
Then I'm
top
like,
dog.
Yeah, that's my go-to. And I'm like, you know, this is the state's docket. This is what I'm sitting with. Am I on the right track? Am I looking at this at the right way? So you need, we need to be collegial with one another.
Sure.
Because you never know. I might sit in an interview 5 years from now, and if I was nasty to you, am I going to get it?
No.
Exactly.
No. Everyone's going to remember that. And also just, there was this practice of being very disrespectful towards court officials. And we know how difficult court officials can be, right? But if you befriend them and you respect them, you'll have such an easy experience at court because they're just willing to help. So don't come with that, I'm the one with the degree here. I'm the one who's an admitted attorney. I mean, you admitted 5 days ago. Calm down, you know. So respect goes a long way. Being a nice person goes a long way. So don't ever, you know, lean on your, I'm the educated one with the LLB degree and the master's and the admission. And then you want to disregard even, you know, the driver or the court staff.
Disregard them. You'll see how you'll be the last one on the roll.
Yeah.
You'll have a meeting at two and you'll be the last one on the roll. Or you'll never get court dates. Everyone around you will be getting court dates. And
they'll
then they're
blacklist
telling you
at court.
your file is missing.
Yeah, they'll blacklist you. So, you know, just from the type of work that you do, and especially because on this podcast, we've never really discussed criminal law, especially for a woman of color. Yeah. Can you tell us some of the challenges that you've experienced in your role specifically as a criminal attorney?
Okay, I mean, you still walk in and there's only two of us, being two females, whether it's myself and another white attorney or myself and another black attorney. We still the minority in criminal court. I don't take it personally. You know, sometimes you go to court and they've got, I call it the little boys club.
Yes.
Then they huddle up over there. They don't talk to you. You'll find that if the prosecutor's male, you'll also, you know, respect
the boys
them
club.
A little
yes.
bit more than
yes.
you. When you walk over to talk, you know, you don't
you're
get
being undermined.
Same, being undermined. And also I'm tiny. So also, I think it also comes with that. Like, they probably think I'm a lot younger than what I am. You know, I'm probably like a candidate attorney who's like my first day in court. But I think I love being underestimated.
Sure. Then you come guns blazing.
Exactly.
The underdog.
The underdog. And I mean, that is also, if I can go back to, you know, how my career started. I was the underdog when we served articles. When I was employed, there was three of us. And the other two, the one at wrote two board exams. She had completed law school. The other one had wrote all four board exams and she had completed law school. I was the only one fresh out of varsity. No boards, no law school, starting off at the same footing as the other two candidate attorneys. I had to work harder than them because I knew that it'll always come back to, oh, because she hasn't registered for law school.
Yes.
She hasn't wrote her boards.
Goodness.
So I had to work on what makes Laurentia strong, which is my personality. When I want something, I get it done.
Okay.
So that was me. I had to set myself apart. And there was this thing where at the firm I served my articles at, the director picked his candidate attorney and he worked on big matters. So you wanted to be
picked.
His favorite.
Yes.
You wanted to be picked. So I think it was the first week of articles, he sent me to the High Court. Back then, we still had to go to room 008.
Yes.
The new candidates don't know because they use court online. And then it was an urgent matter. I had to index and paginate the court file. I had to make sure everything was done. Got back to the office, and he was like, the index is wrong. So it's 2 o'clock. Bear in mind, it's 2 o'clock. The files are ready with the Judge Sutherland. So I'm letting you guys in on a little... my interaction with the Judge Sutherland. So I go back to court trying to, you know, impress the director. I go in and I speak to his registrar and I'm like, there's only a couple of pages. Can I please have the court file? I just want to fix it. We're in court tomorrow. Please help me. And she walks out and she says, I'll say it in Afrikaans and I'll translate it. She said, rechter wil praat met jou, which means judge wants to speak to you. And I go in, fresh candidate. I don't know. This is Judge Sutherland. I walk in and I give the whole of, I don't even know if I said, your worship. I might have said that. And I'm like, I'm a candidate attorney. I introduce myself. I'm just here to get the court file
just
and fix
a few
it.
Pages.
I just want to fix it. And he hands it up. I'm fixing it in the court. I'm fixing the court file. I hand it back to his registrar. I get back. I tell the director, court file's fixed. I spoke to the judge. And he's like, you spoke to the judge. And like, we'll talk about it when you get back to the office.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
fixed it.
Yeah.
And that was my stepping stone in my articles.
It.
And I had my first court experience. And then I had to go with him with the advocate. You know, we were in the high court. We had our urgent matter. So after that, you know, I understood what pushing yourself means.
Yeah.
It opens up more opportunities for you. You're exposed to bigger cases.
And did you know at the time that it was a big deal that you spoke to the Judge Sutherland? Or did you get back to the office and now the
Everyone
director
was
making
like,
a hoo-ha?
Yeah, like,
tell us more.
Tell us again. You did what?
I love that. I love that.
And
that is underdog, hey?
It is.
Yeah.
And I mean, now when I look back, you know, I can tell them I met Judge Sutherland. Mm. I'm not ashamed of my story, you know, like, I push boundaries.
Yeah.
And
I love
yes,
that.
It shaped who I am and it's still who I am. I get the job done.
I really love something that you said earlier, just, you know, a few minutes ago about how it made me think about how we always say we believe that we have nothing to offer. We're bringing nothing to the table. And everybody around you had already done law school. They've already written their boards. And you said, I used what I had, my personality. I love that so much because it's not often that we think that our personality is exactly what we have and exactly what we need to get the job done.
Yeah. And I think also when we head back to, you know, what it's like to be a criminal attorney, it's that there's still that thing of male and female.
Mm.
So even when you go and do a bail application and it's late at night and you brought a guy with, whether it's your father, your boyfriend, your husband, whatever, you'll find the police officers talking to
him. They
want
to look at him and he's like, I'm
like,
sorry, I'm just a doctor. Yeah.
He knows nothing. Don't ask him. I am the one.
Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, we still struggle with that.
Mm.
But, I mean, I learned to work with it.
Mm.
I mean, after years of practice, you learn to choose your battles.
You don't take it personally anymore.
You don't take it personally. I've realized that being a woman in a man's world, sometimes I get preference by being a woman, not by being a litigator.
Yeah.
Sometimes me just going there and pretending to be dumb.
I like that.
It
I like being the underdog because it really does give you a better opportunity to observe. And once you've observed, you're in a better position to comment, to talk, to use your voice, to just see whatever it is in the room that's not right.
Yeah.
So I like that people won't look twice at you because when you do then finally say something, you're going to say something that is based on the observation that you've made. I love that.
And I don't think women in practice should shy away from litigation or criminal law. It's growing. I mean, there are a lot more females in criminal court. There are females going beyond articles because a lot of people drop out. Once they get to choose what type of law they practice, they let go of criminal law. Most move into conveyancing because it's comfortable.
Yeah.
But there's a generation of women we need to fight for. At some point, it should be equal. At some point, it should be 50. Like, numbers should add up. There should be more of us in court.
Sure. I love that.
Because, I mean, the sisterhood we have in court, like, I would normally sit down and I'll have another attorney there and I'll ask her, you know, never appear before this magistrate, like, how is he, you know, have that conversation.
Mm.
And because the guys have that. Normally, when I started out, you'll find that the other attorney won't speak to me. You know, she's one-sided, I'm one-sided. You know, so I think we also need to cultivate that culture amongst ourselves. Mm. When we get to court, yes, there's only three of us. Let's have our little girls club too.
Yes, yes. Sure, I love that. Yeah. I love that so much. Can you tell us about a time in your career where you were just down horrendous? Well, not now in December. I don't know if that had to do with work. But was there a time when it actually had to do with work? And you were like, sure, I regret this. Or am I really cut out for this? Just the time that really got you down and got you in doubt of whether you're on the right path.
Yeah. So with me, I think it was COVID. I think a lot of people went through that and have similar, you know, share the same sentiments. With me, it was COVID. I think I served articles, or my articles ended just when COVID was at its peak.
Mm.
And I sometimes think that, you know, maybe sometimes God created COVID for me to just have like a mental break, you know, in a sense where I could breathe because everything was so tough.
High pressure.
You're about to get admitted. You know, you're not sure, do I know enough?
Mm.
And a lot of people have that question, you know, when you're about to transition over from being a candidate attorney to an admitted attorney.
It's so scary.
Do I stay on?
Yes.
Also, it's scary. Do I stay on?
Scary.
Because you have the offer to stay on. Mm. But do I challenge myself and grow at a different firm?
Mm.
Do I start my own firm?
Mm.
It's all of those things that you're dealing with, you know, that little imposter syndrome that hits back. You ask yourself, you know, do I really know enough? Can I be admitted? Like, if, because now there's not an attorney signing off a pleading.
Mm.
Even though you drafted stuff for 2 years, it was never your responsibility because you didn't sign it.
Yeah, the buck didn't stop with you, you know. You were sort
now
of,
it does. Mm, yeah. Mm. So I think for me, it was that transition of moving from candidate attorney to admitted attorney, you know. Mm. I also had a choice to make because I had two offers. I had already received a job at a different firm before I was admitted, and I had the offer at the current firm.
Mm.
So I had to think strategically, what's the best career move?
And tell me more about that, because at the time that you joined, it was also a fairly new firm. How did you know? Joining a new firm when you yourself were in a transition where you're not sure, do I know enough? What made you bank on joining a newly established firm with quite a, I'd say, young interface?
So that's actually, this is my third firm.
Mm.
I'm not a hopscotch, guys. So when I joined Mashiti Shoe Attorneys, I was already in practice for, I think, 2 or 3 years.
Mm.
So it was a big career change because obviously the firm I was at was established. You know,
yeah.
It had years.
Mm.
I had a senior director, you know, who still overlooked a lot of stuff.
Mm.
So now it was like, okay, you're moving over to a new firm. Like you said, it's a new firm off the ground.
You're possibly going to head
a department,
whatever department you find yourself in.
I think with me, it was, I knew I needed a change in my life.
Mm.
God will sometimes make you so uncomfortable when you become too complacent.
Mm.
I was complacent. I was doing the same type of work all day, every day.
Mm.
I wasn't pushing myself.
Mm. You weren't challenging yourself.
I wasn't
yourself.
Challenging myself. Mm. And I had a buffer. I had the director. You know, if I had a problem with a file, I could just say, you know,
sorry.
Could you? Can we try and figure out what to do? Now
you are the
I
one.
Am the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now it's like you need to figure it out.
Mm.
So I'm glad I made that career change.
Mm.
You know, I was becoming too complacent.
Mm.
And I think it's so important for us to know when your time is up at a certain place.
Mm.
Be it professionally, romantically, whatever.
Mm.
Know when your time is up.
Mm.
Because you need to move into your next season.
Sure.
And I stayed. I mean, I don't practice as much criminal law as what I did at the other firm. But when I do, you know, I love doing it.
Mm.
I've moved into family law now, something I always thought I hated. But, you know, I now use the litigation tools in family law because it's necessary. Nothing is for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, you don't go through things for nothing.
Mm. I really want to stress what you said as well about how moving into a firm that's off the ground enabled you to sort of be your own boss and oversee a department. I mean, even if it's not in technical terms or whatever, you know that a lot of the work...
It's your responsibility.
It's your responsibility, and maybe even the young, your younger colleagues look to you for, you know, guidance in that specific area of practice or whatever. But that is something that I want to stress, that we really need to... We're not all going to work at top five law firms. I say this often because I really need the younger generation to understand that we're not all going to find ourselves at the top five in Sandton. We're not all going to find ourselves in medium firms. And also, it's impossible that we all start our own thing. So sometimes it's very important to bank on joining a new team, joining a new firm altogether, and bringing your personality and your fresh perspective into the growth of a new firm. And a lot of the time when you work like that, you're not working for somebody, you're working with somebody. Someone. And the growth prospects are so much higher when you choose the attitude of, I'm going to be working with somebody for our mutual benefit.
And I mean, also, like you said, if you move into the big five, how do you create a name for yourself? Because that's an established firm. Associate number 156. The firm I'm at, I get calls for people saying, I heard her speak on Radio 2000. I want her to deal with my matter. Where is, and sometimes they confuse us. They call me Jacob's Mashitisho. So they want to speak to Jacob's Mashitisho. So it's like, you know, it's that thing, you know, you also... establishing your brand, who you are as an attorney, you allow yourself to grow with a firm to make your name at the smaller firms. Because at the bigger firm, you work from 6 until 9 in the evening. Why do you have to show for it? Why do you have to show for it? I mean, also the type of clients that you deal with. I mean, I deal with a man on the street. That's my client base. I don't have... Okay, we've got corporates, that's mostly Kulu stuff, but I deal with a man on the street. And it gives me so much satisfaction knowing that I changed someone's life. You know, there's no amount of money that you can put on that.
On changing
a life.
And saving a life.
And saving a life.
I love that.
It's you can't put money on that.
Sure. And, you know, we spoke about some of the challenges that you've experienced, but what's your career highlight? I mean, other than the Judge Sutherland, what maybe just one or two other career highlights that sometimes you look in the mirror and you're like, damn, girl, you're killing it.
I would say my first civil trial. I went up against an advocate who tried to break me outside of court. And I say this because you're a woman, and I know there are women watching this who have gone through this. I went to court already, you know, knowing I'm going up against an advocate. And he tried to play mind games with me outside of court, you know, in the sense of, I'm not married. Luckily, I'm not a woman that it phases me that I'm not married. But, you know, he tried to play that, you know, and some sexist jokes here and there. And when I beat that advocate with that civil trial, he walked over to me and he said it was the first time he lost. And I was like, you know, you tried to break me not only as your opponent, but you tried to come at my character as my woman would. You know, I worked hard to get where I am. So, you know, for me, that'll always be my career highlight, you know. Knowing that, you know, you deserved of that judgment. You know, you deserved it. You worked hard. You know, it's a pat on your back as a young attorney beating a well-established advocate in a matter.
Sure.
So for me, that'll always be my thing.
Your career
highlight. My career highlight.
No one can
and
take
and
it
another
from
thing, which is not perhaps a career highlight, but something you actually exposed me to. Because... you invited me to the Speed Mentorship.
Yes, that was fun. We're going to have another one of those.
It was, and I think it's your mentee. I don't know if she shared it with you, but
Shalina.
We had a moment.
Shalina.
We had a moment, and she said to me that she didn't want to be there that specific day because there was issues. But one of the things you said was that they weren't allowed to ask us personal questions, but you never said we're not allowed to ask them personal questions. Oh, so I found the loophole.
Fine. Oh, this attorney.
And then she said something to me, which I wish someone said to me 10 years ago.
Sure.
Because what she was going through was something I went through. And me being there and her being there.
At that time,
I could give her the advice she needed.
Mm.
In that specific aspect of her life. We're not going to dive into that.
Yes, absolutely.
But what she needed, you brought different people together. Not knowing that. I mean, that was something, you know, emotional for me.
You're giving me goosebumps.
I was like, many times as practitioners, we don't do this. We don't do the mentorship part. We don't do the meeting with students. You know, it's a handful of you guys that do that.
Mm.
I was one of them. All I wanted to do was litigate. I wanted to draft. I wanted to be in court. I didn't understand that it's important to give back.
Sure. In the form of mentorship specifically, yes.
You need to give back. Mm. Because had I not been there, maybe God would have used someone else. But, I mean, she needed to hear what I had to say at that moment.
Mm.
So I think that is also a career highlight for me, you know, knowing that I assisted someone in making a life-altering decision.
Mm.
She didn't open up about it, but I could tell, you know, how we were talking. There was more to it than that. And I said to her, what I said to her.
Yeah,
and,
we can
and,
talk.
You know,
sure.
I hope that, you know, she made the right decision. You know, I never got to see her again after that.
I mean,
that.
She'll be in touch after, because she's also a diehard fan of the podcast. But I think one of the things I love more about, or most about the mentorship, and just including you guys in the mentorship, is that it opens up the mentee's network to my network. Because it will forever be easy for her to say, hi, Laurentia, we met at the Speed Mentorship. You assisted me with ABC. This is where I'm at in my life right now. I just thought I'd give you an update. Yeah. But are you also able to assist me with this next thing, you know?
Yeah.
And the relationship really can carry on perpetually, and you know, in that context. So thank you for sharing that with us. That is very important. Thank you for sharing it with me.
Yeah.
In my head now, I'm already like, dates for the next one. Like,
no, it's necessary.
Now that I know it really works. I had good feedback. But now that I know that it's also, you know, just life-changing. But Laurentia, in the little time that we have left, the 5-6 minutes, can you just, you know, maybe share a word of encouragement with anybody who's listening and they're not in such a good space? Or is there anything that keeps you up at night? That now you have this platform that you can speak about it and just create awareness about it. These last 5 minutes are your time to shine.
Okay. No, I think also I would say your imposter syndrome,
sure.
You know, a lot of us suffer from it, and you need to dive into who you are as a woman. Mm. All the hard work you've put in, you deserve it of it.
Mm.
You deserve the title. You deserve the accolades. You deserve everything that will come with your hard work. And there are going to be days where you don't feel okay. And it's fine.
Mm.
We discussed this earlier. Struggle is there to shape you.
Yo.
You need I need a character building day.
Mm.
I can't stay complacent. I need to shed my skin. You need to shed your skin.
Mm.
If you are consistently going to be guarded and you're not going to expose yourself to change, you're not going to expose yourself to new opportunities, you're always going to play it safe, you're never going to tap into who you really need to be. So trust yourself. Tap into who you need to be. Make the change. If it's cutting your hair, cut your hair. If it's changing a job, change the job.
Yeah.
If it's ending a relationship, end the relationship.
Yeah.
I am a firm believer in it all starts with me. Mm. Many times we blame the color of our skin. We blame where we grew up. We blame the opportunities. Yeah, but other kids had that. I didn't have that.
Mm.
But we all have the same 24 hours.
Mm.
What are you doing with your 24 hours? It's okay not to be okay, but on the days when you are okay, make it intentional. Do what you need to do for yourself.
Yeah.
There's no No one coming to save you. You are your life jacket. And that is what being in this profession has taught me.
Mm.
That ultimately I've got me. As much as people love me, people support me, people can pull me up, you can network with me, you can put me in a position, you can place me there. But it all starts with me. How intentional am I about the opportunity that is given to me? And also, guys, let's be cognizant of this. When people put you on in a position, we're vouching for you. You carrying both our names when you are placed in a situation. So don't use that platform or that opportunity. Don't take it for granted because we took a shot at it with you. So you, I've seen this happen. You know, we even sometimes afraid to refer people because you're going to trust me and you're going to take my word for it. But then if this person doesn't do what they need to do, then it's a bad reflection on me. So if you are given an opportunity, guys, don't take it for granted. Don't let, life is short, point blank. Life is short. Let's be intentional. Let's be considerate. Let's push ourselves. You know, let's do what we need to do to be the better version of ourselves.
Thank you. Drops mic. Thank you so much, Laurentia, for joining us today, for sharing your story with us, your experiences with us, challenges, all the great stuff as well. Thank you for the very enlightening words you've shared with us now at the end, and see you soon. Actually, I know you'll be quite the resident feature now that I know that the speed mentorship works. You'll be hearing from me soon. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And you at home, you know the drill. If you enjoyed today's episode, please do like and comment. Don't forget to subscribe and don't forget to share this episode with somebody. It will change their life.